Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get me the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle keep popping that water, man. Y'all jacking. It's a party, it's a party, it's a party.
This is 11 Personnel. I'm Nick Roush, and Adam Luckett, I've got a question for you.
Shoot.
I had a much better question, like, prepared and, like, rehearsed. And then I just kind of got lost in the weeds on the way over here. It's busy. There's a five-car pileup. When does that ever happen? You know, I'm going through back roads.
Only in untimely situations does it happen.
Oh, yeah, of course. Right after you're trying to, like, get some bogs up real quick. But, you know, it's they say football's, it's off season, but I'm not buying it. Football never stops, and that's why we're here to talk chalk, because it's actually kind of a busy news day here on a Monday evening, 6 days away from Super Bowl 54, and Mark Stoops, he's busy recruiting.
It's recruiting season. You know, it'd be nice to have a junior day during a Saturday college basketball game.
Yeah, that would be cool.
They've kind of had to adjust on the fly.
When you're, like, if you were playing good teams, like, you know, I don't know, an Auburn or, like, every other game for the next month. That's a month where they go at Arkansas, at Texas Tech, at Auburn for college game day.
At Tennessee.
Like, can't throw one in there, SEC?
Yeah, we talked about this last week, but it's still just crazy.
It's annoying. But they actually still did have a lot of recruits in, and they're trying to put a bow on the signing class that I guess the next time we'll talk, we'll probably just wait till Wednesday after signing day. And they'll add a couple more. Heard Torrance Davis is going to sign.
It's sneaking up on us.
I know. Because, yeah, you just don't.
It's like a fake signing day.
Yeah, it really is. But Torrance Davis, he didn't sign in the first period, heard he's going to sign in this one. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that sounds like that was a clearinghouse issue.
Michael Drennan, still up in the air. We don't really know.
Absolutely nothing from that camp.
Mm-hmm.
And, in fact, so much nothing that there's conflicted reports where, like, you know, one guy,
Josh Helmholt.
Yeah,
he's like the Midwest Rivals guy.
Yeah, Midwest Rivals guy. He talked to his dad, and his dad said that status quo, no new visits. And then Roland had where he was going to go visit, like, Stanford or, I don't know, some other West Coast schools. So, like, who knows with that kid?
Well, if he's going to do it, he only really has 1 week left.
I know. I planned on doing some digging today. Instead, I got into the weeds looking at some of the recruits they had over the weekend, which they call it Junior Day. But there weren't that many juniors there, Adam Luckett. There was now one of the really talented juniors, Micah Crowell. He is like top 100 receiver from North Carolina. Kind of not a typical recruiting territory.
Right.
Just like the kid they got in from Philly that Brad White brought in. He brought in some edge from Philly that's a top 100. It's going to be a junior next year. But really what it was all about, though, is they brought in a ton of like freshman sophomores from the state of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Really big on getting
big in-state recruiting event.
Yeah, they had a lot of kids from Corbin. There were four from there. They had the kid from Manuel, who I think is going to be good. Juwan Northington,
mm-hmm.
who I don't think he's kin to the Northington that is got a statue on UK's campus.
Mr. Nate Northington.
Yes. This Northington, though, I believe Wildcat Corey is his uncle. I couldn't really confirm it, but he was I'm almost certain that that's the case. Wildcat Corey, long time KSR caller, but Northington, he almost single handedly beat Mail this year. Emmanuel was not that good,
right?
And they haven't. Mail was top 25 in the nation, hadn't lost to Emmanuel since 2012, and Northington put him up 14-0, put Mail in a hole. They had to get a field goal with like 3 minutes left just to win the game by one. So that kid's going to end up being a stud. He's basketball and track.
Three-sport athlete.
And, you know, you can't say enough good things about the three-sport athletes out there.
And he also has a teammate that's getting some interest.
Yeah, Blakey?
Eli Blakely. Or Blakey, yeah.
Yeah, I kept wanting to call him Blakely, too. Because, you know, like...
Never heard Blakey.
Blakey sounds like, oh, little Blakey. Oh, you know, like...
But here's the thing with recruiting. A lot of times, some of these guys' names that we will think... their name for a while, and then they'll get to Lexington on signing day, and then we'll find out. Oh,
I called Jagger Jaeger.
Yeah, I still want to call him Jaeger Burton.
Jaeger Burton does sound like a shot. Hey, let's take a Jaeger Burton. It's a Jaeger Burton. Oh, don't worry. There's Jaeger and a bunch of
stuff. If you have to ask, you don't want to know.
So they had a lot of good in-state kids. The Corbin kids, what I thought was funny, I'm sure this was just coincidence that. Right after Travion Longmire and Dakota Patterson, I believe is his last name. Mm-hmm. Right after all those kids are up, they have their banquet at afterwards, down in Corbin. And you know who was signing autographs was Lynn Bowden, and he just so happened to stop by and say, "Hey, Corbin Redhounds, how you doing?"
Imagine that.
Yeah, funny how that works out. Great coincidence.
Mm-hmm. And they got two guys, Longmire and Patterson. They're looking like.
Yeah, Patterson kid's big, too. He's like 6'3", 6'4".
Going to be legit Power 5 freshman. Prospects.
Longmire, he got offered as a freshman, too. He'll be a junior next year. He was one of those kids who he does a little bit of everything for him. So I'll be interested to see. I think he's more of a defensive back at that next level. I'm interested to see what happens to those kids, especially now that Justin Haddix is out of there, like who they replace and all that. We kind of mentioned that stuff last week, but... Coaching, it does play a significant role in development, especially at that age.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd be interested to see that. There was a lot of other in-state kids who actually were at U of L at Saturdays. Red Carpet Saturday. Oh, just so lame. Just so lame. But you know what? You got to do what you got to do. It's Cruton.
They're selling 8-1 season, and some people in the national media are selling it too.
No, like it. You're wrong. All people are buying it. And you know what, though? You know why I can, like, the part where I don't blame them is it's like, well, they got to be, you know, somebody's got to win games in the ACC. Like,
that's true.
Wake Forest, they lost their quarterback. They're going to stink next year. Boston College is in a rebuild. I mean, really, you got to beat Dave Dorn to open the season. And that's, like, the swing between an 8 and a 9 win.
It can't get much worse. Yeah. A lot of those teams are going to get better by default.
I wish they had North Carolina on the schedule. Like the regular at UNC.
North Carolina's fun, but once you see their schedule, they become a lot less fun. They go to UCF, and they play Auburn in their first two games.
Ugh. Oh, Mac. Bit off a little more than you too, so buddy.
He could have a 9-3 team that's really going to go maybe 7-5. Because of the schedule.
Yeah, and I quickly just decided to quit caring about those two early top 25s that have
one of them. I've made them before, and they're a lot harder than you think. Because you don't know who's coming back. There's so much can change from now until even spring ball starts.
Mm-hmm.
From spring ball till fall camp starts. So that's my point on it, but... Like I said, after the Louisville game on this podcast, people are going to be eating up Scott Satterfield and that program. And then the bowl game, winning the bowl game just...
Yeah. Especially against an ACC team.
It was a big jumping off point. A big momentum booster for them heading into the offseason.
I'm still...
And then they're selling, you know, the quarterback's back, Travion Samuel's back. Travion Samuel's going to be... Not Travion Samuel.
He's not long gone. Now I can't think of his name either.
Tutu Atwell.
Yeah, Tutu and Javion Hawkins.
All of those guys are back. And so they're going to be projected to be one of the top scoring offenses in college football, and offense sells, man.
while everybody's drooling over Louisville, it's during recruiting season. I would like to draw your attention to Louisville's coaching staff. Because there's one person in particular that's hilarious to look at. Just especially to take pictures with. He's not as awkward as Chris Konakis.
Are you talking about their wide receivers coach?
Yes, wide receivers Gunter? Coach, yes. Gunter Brewer. My man is all about throwing L's up and wearing
flat just bills.
Enormous flat bills, too. They aren't your regular size flat bill. These flat bills are like two sizes too large.
They're not even your skater board flat bills like Kyle Shanahan wears.
Yeah, no, yeah. They're not your what was the show with not Robin Big, but the other one?
Fantasy Factory?
Yeah, and it was just the most skaterific show ever. Right. And it was not as cool as Jackass, mm-hmm. but, you know, like, that, I can put, but the ones that Gunner Brewer wears, pretty ridiculous. I didn't see one of him with Dan Key, but I'm sure that's going to be coming down the road. Dan Key, by the way, how hilarious is it that that kid's going to be, like, the next big, I mean, he's going to really blow up. He got an offer from Oregon last week. I'm sure Clemson's going to be rolling through Frederick Douglass.
Him and Dekel Crowdus will be on the same team next year.
Yeah, and that quarterback's good enough that he'll
get some, be able to get the ball to him.
Yeah. So that team, you got to go get it. Come on, Mark. Go find him a coach.
Yeah, they'll be the heavy favorite. It's steaming like in 5A.
Especially now Michael Myers gone.
No, that dude was a freak, man.
My God. He did not look like a high school kid. Going to Notre Dame.
Of course, Covcast guy.
And there was another kid who was going to Notre Dame until this weekend. And it really is, like, sad news. I mean, it's self-inflicted. But Landon Bartleson, Boyle County product, one of two Boyle County kids who signed to play FBS, Reese Smith going to play for Neil Brennan, West Virginia, and Landon Bartleson going to play at Notre Dame for Brian Kelly, going to be a DB / special teamer. And over the weekend, he was arrested after him and two other kids, the other kids were minor, 16, for breaking into a place and stealing guns. Not just guns, like assault weapons.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it looked like a
heavy artillery.
Yes, very heavy artillery. Stuff you go to war with. And then hijacking a Lexus. Not only were they just like arrested, like ATFs involved. Right. So
you're not really going to get away with that in the same night.
No. Like, just in general, like a smooth criminal couldn't get away with that. But then you add to the fact, like, this isn't like a kid. He was going to Notre Dame. What is it all the alums complain about, how hard it is to get in there?
Right.
Like, he got in, and then now is, like, facing federal, like, the ATF's involved. It's sad that it would all get thrown away in a night. Brian Kelly came out and was like, this isn't the kid we've known. He's not coming to Notre Dame. And part of it's probably because he's facing federal charges. Or at least, like, the feds are involved. That's bad. Stealing guns. This isn't like got caught smoking weed.
Yeah, I mean, he's looking like he's going to be a convicted felon.
Yeah, like.
It's sad is definitely what it is.
Do you know what?
One bad decision, man.
Man.
Ruin your life.
You know what kind of reminded me of, too? Remember Bud Mackey?
Mm-hmm.
Dude was a stud.
Ridge Wilson, in a different way.
Yeah.
Marcus Walker.
Man,
Kentucky's had some too.
Bud Mackey was, because he won Sweet 16 on like a buzzer beater for Scott County. They beat like a Bauer team.
Yeah, I think that was his junior year. And then he was coming back. He was committed to Indiana before senior year started.
And he was like selling hard drugs at school. I was like, dude, what are you doing? I mean, yeah, Ridge was slinging pills in like the West End or something, I think. Man. So we played against Ridge. We were always scrimmage central. And it was one of those plays where I was the backside defensive end, and they threw a screen to the other side to him, like a tight end screen. We had like four dudes on him. And I was like, okay, I don't have to do anything here. And it's at the 5-yard line, and he's just chopping his legs and just pushes the entire pile into the end zone. Like, what in the...
He had some tools, man.
Dude was an athlete, so...
Central had some athletes. back then at that time frame.
That year, one of their best athletes, I always thought, I think his name was Leland. He was the quarterback of that first state championship team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ridge was a sophomore at the time.
Yeah, Tim Patterson.
Tim Patterson, PC Cobble. But all those kids went to UK, except for this quarterback. I thought he was the best athlete. He was good at basketball, too. But, no, I mean, hell, PC Cobble was the only one. Mr. Cobble. I don't know why they called him PC. But he was the only one that actually ended up, you know.
Sticking.
Yeah, and it just, especially right now, I mean, this is the point of the year that, like.
Usually it's the summer where you get up, where at school's over.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got that dead period where you're just waiting pretty much for camp to start. But, yeah, any off-season news, bad news.
Yeah. You don't want to be in the headlines. And
I feel you just hate to see him throw it away even before he didn't even get to South Bend. I mean,
that's your ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Just finish school. Just graduate.
Yeah.
And you're I absolutely hate it. It's tough, but, you know, it happens, and hopefully he learns from this lesson. And is able to move on. Speaking of people moving on, Adam Luckett, transfer portal, it's popping right now. It's really popping.
Transfer portal has really, really, really made college football January and February much more interesting.
And it filled the void, like we said, from fake recruiting season.
Yes.
Because right now, I mean, you know, it's like two kids or something.
5 years ago, we would have been talking about
recruiting. Yeah.
So it has helped fill the void. And as we talked about earlier, signing day's here next week, and we're oblivious to it pretty much.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the portal, a guy, Jaren Williams, man.
Oh. Jaren Williams in the transfer portal?
Back in it. I don't know if he was ever officially in it last year. I know there was a scuttlebutt.
Yeah, I think it was just scuttlebutt.
Mm-hmm. But he's leaving because Derek King, guy at Houston, he tore it up in 2018 with Kendall Briles as their offense coordinator. And then he mysteriously stopped playing after four games this year, said he was just going to redshirt and then play next year.
That whole thing.
Which a lot of people saw through that and didn't believe. Now he's going to Miami.
There was a kid who was a tight end for him who was a grad transfer already, and this was his last year of eligibility, and he had a couple knees.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he had this thread, because he quit the team afterwards. He was like, this is BS, you know, like, I grad transferred for my last year, and then the coaches pretty much decided to tank, and all of the good players redshirt, and we're going to try again next year. But you can't anymore, so, you know, tough titty. Like, you're stuck with us. So, tanking in college football, like, you can't get a better draft pick. You know?
It didn't really get talked about a lot because Houston had a weird schedule. Like, they played their first four games in, like, 18 days or something because they played on Sunday night to open up.
Against Oklahoma.
And then they had, like, a Thursday game thrown in.
In the mix.
So, that last, like, their fourth game. So, in the span of 19 days, they played, like, four games. They got off to, I believe, like a 2-2 start. It wasn't good. So, I mean, things got really weird in Dana Holgerson's first year, and he responds by promoting Shannon Dawson to offensive coordinator at the end of the season.
So I'm sure that would work well.
Getting the band back together. But Jaren Williams, man, in an alternate universe, he's probably entering his junior season in Lexington as a third-year starter. And Terry Wilson is at Indiana or Nebraska. And we never see the Lynn Bowden experiment.
Nope. I mean, that's wild to think. But it's one of those, you had the report in the Miami Herald from the guy who, they just described him as an anonymous upperclassman who described it as, there's more players who, they're more focused on partying than playing football. And
which, that right there, I'm sure a lot of former players would hate that somebody would go and say that and would call that a non-credible source to say that, like, because what happens in their stays in there. But the fact that somebody did that that there may be legs to that shows you how rotten that locker room situation is right now, how rotten that culture is.
And the fact that he thought that he needed to go public.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, in a lot of it too, that culture, it's top down. Not even necessarily, but like as a quarterback, you can't be the dude who's out partying. Like, I mean, Drew Barker could get away with getting knocked out as a redshirt freshman because he was being redshirted at the time. And you're like, okay, maybe this is a learning lesson. But like, you're on shaky ground if your quarterback isn't the dude setting a good example for others.
Right.
And Williams, the night before the FIU game, he throws three picks.
Well, that was a big part. Curfew. I think he said that a bunch of them didn't take that FIU week serious. They're out partying. And then Jerem Williams, I think he missed, like, it was pronounced that he missed practice.
He missed practice. And they still started him.
Right.
Or they played him. I don't know if they started him.
Right. I think they started Nikosi Perry that week, and it was just bad. Then they had the Tate Martell experience, and Diaz went all in on some grad transfers last year. So they just had that culture, that program is in, looks like, really rough shape right now. And it's interesting to see if Fanny Diaz can get it turned around. Because the AD already had to vote of confidence letter 2 years in a row.
Vote of confidence after 1 year. Oh, God. Why does De'Aaron King want to go there?
Good question.
I thought everybody was like, Oklahoma.
They hired Rhett Lashley. Now they're going all in on him.
Where's Rhett Lashley from? King.
He was originally Gus's like right-hand man, Arkansas State and Auburn.
Okay.
Gus gave up play calling duties to him, and then once that happened, then they kind of butted heads. Imagine that. And then he went to UConn for a year and SMU for a year and was their offensive coordinator. Did a good job both those places. So he's coming in there. They're riding on him. But Miami, they did this one thing this year. They have a guy that there's a guy named Alonzo Highsmith who's like a career NFL personnel director, like guy. So NFL front office guy. Their AD went to him, and there was a rumor that they wanted him to kind of like they were going to take like an NFL approach.
It's like Herm Edwards. Kind of deal?
Well, not the coach, but just to oversee everything. And it's to be like
a GM of the team?
And to be like, I guess, the guy coaching, the head coach.
So and, like the Dwayne Peavy for Cal, in a sense? And by like an associate AD or some kind of?
Yeah, kind of. Well, just be like, I guess he would be have a lot of say in recruiting and what they were doing and kind of making sure everything is falling in line.
Yeah.
Well, apparently Manny Diaz kind of bucked against that.
Oh, you mean he didn't want another boss?
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff going on there in Miami. So Jerem Williams, the big point is though, Jerem Williams fell in love with the logo and the brand name and the people. I think with the people around him too.
Yeah.
Fell in love with it.
Oh, definitely.
And I think it's a safe assumption that he had people in his ear telling him he was better than Kentucky. And he needed to go somewhere else.
The one game he was there for, where he did like officially flip or whatever, was Miami's biggest win in 20
Notre Dame,
years.
The Notre Dame game.
Yeah, and they probably, I mean, 2017. They haven't had anything close to that in forever. And it doesn't look
college
like they're
game day
have
was
anything
there.
Close to it again for 10
they,
more years.
They were undefeated.
Yeah, but then Mark Richt just, I think, got sick of it.
Well, what happened was Mark Richt. At Georgia, they hamstrung him and told him he couldn't. They didn't want him to be the play caller, and he had to fire some of his like close people. So he goes to Miami to call. He gets the call plays, and he gets to bring along some people he's close with. And then the same thing happened. They wanted him to shake up the staff, and he was just like,
"I'm over you.
I'm a millionaire.
Well, yeah,
I'm just gonna go retire."
Yeah. He The goatee edition was a fun. Yeah,
that was fun.
That was a nice bad boy kind of way to go about it, Mark Richt.
That's
a bad boy.
Yeah, Mark
I love
Richt,
that that's
bad
how
boy.
That's how he decides he's gonna become a bad boy too. Yeah. Growing a goatee.
Mm-hmm. So Jerem Williams, man, he's got skills, but there's some leadership probably questions he's got to answer, and I'll be interested to see what opportunities are there for him.
One who I think is in the transfer portal that I do think is gonna be successful is Peyton Ramsey. That guy. He made my Indiana good. Not non-Windiana good enough, but that's still another big name that's out there.
Today, just out there today.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm also kind of surprised like it? I've met a whole lot of Kentucky guys in that transfer portal.
Well, you got Trey Wilkins, who's still out there.
Stanley Garner
still out there. Shaunkel Knight Golf is technically, and he did put his name in the portal. Yeah, cool. And then Walker Wood.
But, like, I'm surprised there haven't been more. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're waiting until after the spring.
Like, yeah, they could have.
I think there's a scenario where they, like, kind of are, the coaches are like, well, you know, we'll see how spring goes. See where you stand. At least give it one more shot. Because I think in some cases it's like wide receivers who just didn't catch passes. Like, you would think that some of those kids who are redshirt freshmen
there
or whatever.
There is a log jam at wide receiver.
Yeah. So, like, they're probably going to try to figure out pecking order during spring. And if they don't fit, then out.
I think it's getting to the point with some of the offensive linemen, too. It's getting a little crowded there.
Yes. Yes. Well.
But now there's playing time to be had, but those spots could start to be established now.
Yeah.
And then you're bringing in a junior college player, Jeremy Flax, and a blue chip recruit in John Young this spring.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably, the staff is going to be pushing to take some of those spots.
I hope Nick Lewis isn't one of them. I like seeing Nick Lewis around. Cause big boy. He's so damn big. He's like 6'9", 350, I don't know what. But he's just enormous.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth Horsey has a cool story.
Yes.
If he could get in there.
Yeah, and I think if it was just purely based on depth chart, he would be the next man up at that left guard
spot.
Yeah,
he's going to be in that mix for sure.
And I mean, so if y'all don't know Kenneth Horsey's story, Kenneth Horsey had open heart surgery as a senior in high school. I forget if it was a bacterial infection, but they found something on his heart, and they had to go in and do like emergency surgery on him. So that happens. And surprisingly, like, post-op, you know, he's fine. Goes to rehab. You know, everything goes according to plan. And really, he had no restrictions other than he had to have, they eased him in. And they were, you know, giving him EKGs and stuff. But there really weren't restrictions. And he was able to start practice right when everybody else did that fall camp.
It's really kind of crazy.
Yeah. So he redshirted this year. He was a redshirt freshman. Mm-hmm. And he recently spoke at an American Heart Association. Yeah, they're doing a walk this spring at Keeneland, and it was like the kind of kickoff of the campaign. You know, you have those luncheons that kind of just try to get donations, get things rolling. And he spoke at it, and I was like, holy crap, that dude, he used his red shirt years to put on some LB. So I'll be interested to see how he fits in to this rotation moving forward, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more later on. But two big coaching things that I don't know why we've waited so long to get to. You know, you just kind of get talking and, you know, you just go. First things first, Mike Stoops. Got another Stoops in the mix, maybe.
There's a rumor going around.
Yeah. Ryan Lemon was the first one to say it outside of message board. All those message board folks, they were like, oh, they've been talking about it for weeks over on bigblueinyourface.com. And it's like, okay, buddy, if you're hiding it behind a paywall, then it's not really out there. I don't know. That's just me. Like, to try to discount Ryan Lemon, that's the first person who's publicly said anything for the masses to reach in a while. And he said it Saturday morning that I don't forget the exact language, but he definitely didn't say that it's going to happen. He was like, there could be in the mix to be the next coach to replace Dean.
He's a candidate.
Yes. So, if Mike Stoops becomes the replacement for Dean Hood and coaches safeties or something, What would you think of that, Adam Luckett?
I think resume-wise, you look at it, and that's kind of what you want. A guy that's a former head coach who's a grizzled vet.
Power 5 head coach.
Power 5 head coach.
Almost 10 years.
Has like 2 decades worth of Power 5 defensive coordinator experience. He's been a secondary coach for forever. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban thinks enough of him to bring him into his building to work for him.
He's been there for a year and a half. I think he came in right after Oklahoma got rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
In what's his name's first year?
It's Lincoln Riley's second year.
It was the second year they got
Because they lost to the Rose Bowl to the Georgia. His first year, DC.
Yeah,
and then middle of Kyler Murray year is when he was fired from Oklahoma.
Gotcha.
But so that. Obviously, I think, you know, there's always the Stoops brother connection.
Oh, yeah.
And his brother Bob got rid of a guy named Brent Venables to bring his brother Mike in. And that didn't work out too well.
Yeah, that I think some Oklahoma fans they remember that pretty well. But I just like that whenever the name got brought up, I knew my mentions were gonna be on fire. Mike's keep him away from the defense. Well, just keep him as far away as possible. He doesn't know anything about it. Which, like, the first random year I picked Luckett to look up Oklahoma stats, clicked on 2015 when he was their defensive coordinator. They were first in Big 12 in scoring, total defense, and top 25 nationally. And that's in the Big 12 where nobody plays defense. I think that's the main point is, A, if you're going to judge Mike Stoops based on the Big 12, well, then every Big 12 coordinator sucks.
I think what happened with Mike Stoops is they didn't really adjust well enough the last couple years of his tenure. Gotten the right kind of scheme personnel-wise. He was a little stubborn on what he wanted to run, mm-hmm. and it allowed them to get picked apart. And for whatever reason, they weren't developing the guys they were getting, especially in the front seven. And that kind of evened the playing field for the rest of the Big 12. And then if you're not able to dominate up front, then it opens your back end up for a lot of problems. And when Lincoln Riley came in, they're not like going nuclear NASCAR fast on offense, but they're getting a lot of explosives. They're scoring in a lot of three-play drives, four-play drives, and it was putting his defense on the field a lot.
Yeah.
So, and then you look at his Arizona tenure. His Arizona tenure, he did really well when Sonny Dykes was calling plays and when Mark Stoops was calling the defense.
Yeah.
When those guys left, it went in the tank.
Yep, pretty quickly.
So, but he stuck around there for 8 years, from 04 to 11. So it wasn't like it was just a quick cup of coffee. So,
yeah, he went to some bowl games.
So he's an experienced vet. I think it's kind of what you want at that position. He's not going to be calling the defense. Brad White's going to be calling the defense, but it's another guy in the room to guide you along.
I think the overall thing of this all, like, just if you're mad, like, oh my gosh, Mike Stoops, get him away from the he's not going to be a defensive coordinator. He's going to be with Dean Hood.
Right.
And you're replacing a guy who is a former head coach with another guy, former head coach, except this guy is a Power 5 head coach. Dean Hood was just – he's at EKU. He's an Ohio Valley coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what Stoops has done well, because even early on he had Brad and Dale Pivido. He has a good balance of old heads and young heads. And Geddy Grand really gave
that
to him.
I think
that
was something – if you ask Stoops when Pivido left in 13, I think that was something he probably – didn't do well enough. Was in 14 and 15, they really didn't have that.
No, they didn't. And having a guy like Mike, a guy who he's worked with before, like, he knows he can work with him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, it's the shoes on the other foot now,
right?
Because Mark's the boss, and I'm sure that would take some getting used to. But here's my thing. I bet you Mike Stoops would be up in the booth the entire game, just looking at stuff. You know, like, I can't, I would see that being his role.
That's where he was at Oklahoma in the last few years of his tenure.
You take Summerall, you put him down the sideline. I never liked Summerall being up in the booth. Summerall seems like a sideline guy. He's way too fired up for that. And I think what would happen is I think you would give Mike Stoops this role of safeties coach, and then Summerall would be special teams. If not special teams coordinator, he would split it with Clink or something like that. But, I mean, Summerall got a pretty hefty raise.
And Summerall was the special teams coordinator at Troy there for 3 years. So I think he would be the heavy favorite to take over the position.
And that raise went from, like, he's making like 250 and now he's up to 600, mm-hmm. which is it's just under what Vince makes.
That says a lot about what Mark Stoops thinks about John Summerall.
Vince will make 625 next year. He'll only make 25 more than Summerall.
Mm-hmm.
The few times I've had, I don't have a lot of conversations with Mark Stoops, but there was one time during a practice this year, and I was like, you know, we're standing over there just for a little bit. I was like, man, that John Summerall, dude gets after it. He goes, he's a ball coach, ain't he? It's like, yeah, he is. He is a ball coach. So I that's kind of how I foresee that shaking out, and I kind of do expect him to end up eventually bringing in Mike Stoops. And honestly, if you think it's a, like, You think there was going to be a Mark Stoops without another Stoops joining him? That's kind of what you get when you sign up for the Stoops. That's true. If he wants to bring his brother in after 7 years, he's earned the right to bring his brother in, especially not calling defense. You know, like, and I don't think Mark would let Mike call his defenses either. I think Mark would call the defense before he'd hand it over to Mike.
How many arguments you think they're going to have at practice or in the war room?
And also, if it's one of those things, too, where you don't think he'd work well with his brothers, it got him the job at Florida State. And Vince Merrill's basically a brother anyway. I mean, they grew up running around together in the same house. So, like, he's worked a plane. You know what I mean? Like, I know some people, I could work with my brother, but some people, I don't think they could work with theirs. Like, could you and your brother work together? Like, I think you could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's different, man. I mean, work is
in college football. It's all nepotism.
Yeah, just look at Missouri State staff. Yeah, you've seen it. Missouri State staff.
Well, I know there's one Petrino. Believe it or not, that's joining Papa. Nick's going from UT. Martin over there. There was another.
Both son-in-laws are joining.
Okay, the son-in-laws.
One's going to be a defense coordinator.
Oh, he's a defensive coordinator, too?
Ryan Beard, who worked at Central Michigan this year, was our special teams coordinator. He's going to be the DC there at Missouri State. And Mike Cassidy, who was Bobby's DC at Louisville, his son is on the staff, and I think his son's pretty young, like 20s, somewhere in the 20s.
Say, Mike Cassidy. Mike Cassidy is a very nice man. His health's not doing too well, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's a tight circle Bobby Petrino keeps.
Yeah. The company, he does not overextend himself too much. I was surprised he hadn't hired Greg Nort, too. I know. It's coming up next.
I know.
But in other kind of moving and shaking news, today, Bo Pelini took the job. He's going back to LSU, calling Baton Rouge.
He is. He's going back.
Making $2.5 million, give or take.
About the same as Aranda made.
Yeah, to be Coach O's defense coordinator. Pelini won a national championship at LSU back in 07.
He was their old DC from 2005 to 2007.
They were pretty dang good during that time.
He came in with Les Miles' first year.
Yeah, and left there to go to Nebraska, where Nebraska, things soured there.
Quickly.
Hey, if you all haven't listened to the recording where somebody like secretly recorded him after a game, it's foul mouth and it's hilarious. It's one of my favorite because it's so on brand for Bo Pelini, who kind of a grump. But Nebraska fans, you know, they think so highly of themselves that going to the Big 12 championship and consistently winning 8-9 games a year wasn't good enough for them. So things went south fast once that recording came out. But he took the job at Youngstown State. A, it's his hometown, so he's going to go home, help that school. And B, he was making almost as much from Nebraska. No. He was making, in a year, he would make $200,000, give or take, from Youngstown State. In a month, he got paid $130,000 from Nebraska in his buyout. So
Charlie Strong had something set up like that with USF. Like, USF was only really paying him like $1 million a year.
And Texas was giving him like four.
Yeah, he was getting like three per year for Texas. So he was one of the highest paid, maybe it was like four. So he was one of the highest paid coaches in the country. But really, his school that he was working for was really
not paying
bottom of the barrel.
That's crazy. So Pelini was there for that first contract. I did plenty of digging.
Talking about Nebraska?
No, at Youngstown State.
Okay.
So his Youngstown State, the first contract he signed was until that buyout ran out. And then they negotiated a new deal last year. And this is where things get important. Because Pelini's departure, naturally you're like, well, Vince Merrill's got to be on that short list, right?
You would think.
I mean, he's from there. He's recruiting his ass off in that area. And he's when he wasn't there, he was with Pelini at Nebraska. Correct? Was it with Pelini?
Or
was
right, he wasn't a official staff member. He was kind of, he had like some weird administrator GA position.
Yeah. But he also previously worked at Akron too. Same footprint. And then he coached high school ball in that area too, in like Toledo. So he would check all the boxes and immediately you're thinking like, well, does Vince want to go help his, does he want to get into head coaching? Because I think when you turn down Jim Harbaugh for Michigan's recruiting coordinator, like what more step up is there for Vince at this point?
Right.
Besides head coaching.
What's his aspiration? What's his end game, I guess you would say?
So, I went and I was like, all right, let's crunch the numbers. Like, Youngstown said he would obviously be taking a pay grade. Downgrade.
Pay cut, yeah.
So, that's negative for him wanting to leave. What's another positive for him? He wants to get into coaching. Head coaching. That would be a reason why he would leave. He wants to do it for his hometown school. The negative is, remember that story about he promised his Stoops' mom that he'd take care of Mark?
Yeah. Tells it all the time.
Yeah, he tells. So, like, that's obviously a reason why he wouldn't ditch Mark. You can't leave him hanging now, especially before this big year they got coming up. The other big one is why it probably won't happen is because Bo's brother Carl's probably going to take it. I think you know more about this too, because I only saw the stuff that went back to last year.
This is per Football Scoops report. Just to wrap it up quickly, like this last year, I think when Pelini had his new contract negotiations with Youngstown, mm-hmm. part of it was to bring Carl on.
Yes.
And I think, long story short, is that he was planning on leaving probably soon.
Yeah.
And he wanted to, you know, kind of have like a head coach in waiting type thing.
Yeah, so Carl was going to be their defensive coordinator, but more importantly, the successor.
Right.
So, I mean, this
job. We'll see if that sticks. You just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it could have been like a verbal agreement too, like, you know, and then that can open the door. But ultimately, even if Carl Pelini doesn't take that job and it's wide open, I don't think Vince Merrill's going to Youngstown State. It's worth mentioning, and it's worth writing a post about on KSR to keep in your mind. But
usually, if you're going to do the FCS move, it's either that you're super young and you want to be your own boss and you want to go mm-hmm. run with it, or it's maybe becoming clear that you're kind of out of options. And I don't know if Vince is out of options. I think if he played his cards right and he wanted to be a head coach, he could get a MAC job probably pretty soon.
Yeah, I think like that's what you wait for. You wait till Jason Candle gets too good at Toledo, and you go take that job.
Right.
Or, you know, like, I don't think you want to go for a rebuild, but...
Right. I think he would... Now, with the MAC, you got to be careful, because the MAC is cheap, 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 cheap. And you have to play on Tuesday nights, and it's weird, and it's the most... I'm looking for the word here. Parity-ridden conference. Someone else wins that league almost every year.
Yeah.
And it's up and down, and it's...
Consistency is tough to find.
So when you look at a job like Toledo, where they're kind of able to recruit better than most schools, mainly because they kind of have a city to recruit to,
mm-hmm.
and their stadium is not nice per MAC standards, and they have probably the best attendance, the most fans. So, yeah, and that's his alum. So that might be a job he's eyeing from a distance.
And
or he could pick and choose from some of the other MAC schools.
Right.
Like Ohio, when Solich leaves.
It'd be a great job to work into.
That's a program that historically has been one of the worst of the MAC, but Solich has made it so good now for two decades. It may be, you know, ready to, you may be able to go in there, put some recruiting power into it, and then take some kids with a culture already built in.
Yes.
And then go win.
And I think that's where Vince Merrill would succeed,
mm-hmm.
is where, like, doing a rebuild job, he doesn't strike me as a rebuild guy. Like,
it's, right.
It just, that doesn't seem like, because Vince
that's,
is
that's if, great, if he wants to be a head coach, too. He's on a track now where he could...
End up
being $1 million recruiting coordinator.
Exactly.
If the money keeps going up.
They've got given him the title associate head coach.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he could be making $1 million when they give him a contract. He got one last year. I would assume they're going to give him one next year, especially if they make out like gangbusters this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then like you have an honest conversation with Mark. And you say, "All right, Mark, what's the deal? Are we staying or like?" Because you know, here's the thing too that we have to consider. We're reaching a point of that 8-10 year window where you get that itch.
So you're eight coming up.
year eight's coming up. Between years 8 and 10, it's like this. It's, I mean, same thing with Cal. You either get content and you're good and you're down to stay there for life, or you want to make one big jump and see if you can't do it at a higher level.
Which
elsewhere.
Is why I've said I think this year they're teed up to have a big year. For Kentucky, it's getting through this next offseason. If you get through that next offseason with Stoops, I think you're then looking at one more year where you have one more storm to weather. And if you weather that storm,
yeah,
then you're kind of...
Because it's you could have a...
He's there for a while,
You could have a mass exodus.
Unless...
Next year could be a... Well, we're going to be getting used to Stoops. They're going to be here for 20
unless,
years.
Unless like Ohio State or Notre Dame calls.
Yeah. But even then, they'd be calling him at pushing 60.
Right.
You know?
Thing is... There too, honestly, because he got a little later start than most people. Like Mike Norvell starting at 36 years old at the big job.
Yeah. Vince is 51.
Right. Your cousin Jeff is still in his 40s.
Yeah, yeah. He's got plenty of time to.
So, and Stoops got a late, you know, he got a little bit of a late start. So,
I'm with you too on this year, too. Like, your rate of return. Your rate of investment, like I'm not an economics guy, but you've invested a lot into the season, and to leave before you see what kind of dividends you can return off of it, like you want to go for a $200,000 job going back to Youngstown, or
right.
You know, you want to go cash in elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And I think getting paid $1 million a year to, you know, be a recruiter guy in Kentucky, that'd be a pretty sweet
Kentucky game. Would have to, you know, honestly commit to that, but.
I'm going to be interested to see what the salary pool is going to be like once that whole – where it ranks, because they really upped the number a lot.
Right. And I'm looking around some of these teams in the SEC. Now, Kentucky's paying a recruiting coordinator $650,000,
mm-hmm.
and that's probably a lot more than everybody else is paying. But you look at Arkansas, it's got $2 million coordinators. You've got Tennessee, it's got $2 million coordinators. South Carolina has got $2 million coordinators.
One of them's like a $3 million. You know, Bobo's getting paid like $1.5 million or something.
Right.
Two.
And then, I think it's $1.5 million. Then LSU, their DC, Pelini's making $2.5 million. And then I would assume Ensminger is going to be making, right, I would say around between $800,000 and $900,000.
Yeah.
So you just look around the league and these coaches are making. You know, a lot of money. So if Kentucky's winning, they're going to kind of have to get up to that number two, mm-hmm. I think. So I think that staff pool is going to have to maybe take a pretty good jump here soon. Just something to keep an eye on.
Something to keep an eye on. I think they've shown that they're willing to pay.
Right. Well, I mean, I think part of the reason LeBlanc, this is just me reading the tea leaves, part of the reason LeBlanc might have left was because of the money situation. He was making $325,000, I think, at Kentucky, and then I think he's making like $400,000 now at Arkansas. But well, like we said with the pay raises, you saw they invested in Summerall
mm-hmm.
and Klinkscale, and I think that was just kind of
yeah.
And now they're bringing in Amar Stewart on, you know, pretty cheap rate. I think it's like $250,000.
Yeah.
And that's cheap.
Yeah, for it's cheap, SEC, but also that's a hell of a starting.
Oh, yeah.
For I mean, second yeah. year position coach.
We need that money in the blogosphere.
Yeah, I know. I'd appreciate that a lot. Yeah, Matt, let's get some – ooh, that's what we need. We need them to go to SEC Network to have KSR on SEC Network. We start getting the SEC money.
Yeah, that's,
there we go. We're going to be six-figure bloggers before we know it. Before we know it. All right.
Feinbaum's eating it all up.
Yeah, he really – let's do the grand poobah. Now that we're starting to slowly transition the next year, the early enrollees are on campus. They've been there 2.5 weeks now. There's 12 of them.
It's a lot, man.
Yeah. Got a dozen on campus, and it's a dozen of 22. So you've got more kids already there than not. And we want to count down the four or five that – let's just call this the most intriguing look at.
Yeah.
Because you can't call them impact – early enrollees anymore because they aren't going to play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's not because they're not good enough, but it's because the entire class last year redshirted. So you have, I mean, think about that. Stoops has it's a whole, it's almost like you have two incoming classes at once because you're bringing back 20 dudes who redshirted last year.
And we can get into this more later. If you look at next year's two deep, it's kind of freaking ridiculous. Because I was going through it, I believe over the weekend, just kind of writing it out and taking a look at it.
Trying to see what your depth chart would be.
Yeah, and it's pretty deep at just about every spot.
We might have to do where we just put like all of the football heads together and like pull our depth chart just to see where we think it'll stand.
Right.
Because, I mean, it's not going to get too wild. Like, you know, things don't change up.
Well,
that much.
Problem is, like, I don't know where, like, Kelvin Joseph's going to play.
Yeah.
So, like, figuring all that out is kind of interesting.
Like, would they try to put him in nickel or they just say, D Rob, you got this?
Or do they play him at corner? I think he could play corner or safety. So,
I think they would want him just like, hey, go take away a side of the field. You know? Like, because how many times has Kentucky ever had a dude like that? Like, just nobody's throwing it over here.
Yeah, that makes – I mean, that would make the most sense.
But
and they can
but
get,
he, but well, he might have wanted to come here to also be a safety too.
So they could get back to the boundary and field that they've played in the past. They really didn't do that last year. They just kind of played them.
It's rotated. Yeah.
Both the same.
Okay, this year, most intriguing early enrollees. And I'm going to start with a player that we already mentioned in this podcast, and that's Jeremy Flax. Because, A, you don't often get offensive linemen that come in and want to plug and play right away. But that's what Auburn was going to do with him at offensive tackle. And you've got a scenario where you don't really have that option because Kennard and Young might be the best offensive tackles in the SEC.
So they're up there with anybody in the country, I think.
Yeah.
In 2020.
So do you say, all right, Jeremy, we want you to be the third guy and play both and just spell him and give him a series off here and there and kind of rotate him in? Or do you say, all right, this guy, Logan Stenberg, he was a 6'6 offensive guard. Go in there and be a 6'5 offensive guard that's pulling and raising hell. So, that's your.
And you know my theory on JUCOs. You get them not. They're to play. They're not there to sit.
Right. I mean, exactly. And to add to all of this, remember the last JUCO offensive lineman that was highly touted that UK got in?
Tate Leavitt.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just like, will it work out?
Right. And that's the one position where they have the bodies, but you don't know who's going to be in that spot in the twos because you know who the ones are.
I'm trying to think. So Lewis was the left tackle, but he wasn't really close. Who was the right backup?
We had Nasir Watkins as a
number. Yeah, one. So he's been like their kind of third guy.
Swing tackle.
Yeah. So who do you – that's why I think Flax is one of the most – I think he's the most intriguing person in here.
If I had to put money down, I would say that he's – I think they move Fortner to left guard, and then they plug in Flax at right guard.
Okay. All right. You heard it here first, folks.
But I want to see him in spring to see what he looks like, if he can move around enough, or if they just think he's a tackle and we just need a tackle for next year. But we're going to.
So as we bring on the other guys. All right, who do you think is one of the most
I'm sticking in
prospects?
A John Schlarman's position room. John Young, 4-star prospect out of Christian Academy in Louisville. Again, like we're saying with that offensive line, I think he's going to redshirt this year. But when you look at next year, it's going to be wide open. And he's a guy I think they're going to stick at tackle at first. But I think, like Logan Stenberg, I think his best position might be at guard because of he's just a mauler in the run game. So how they use him, where they use him at, and to see if he's getting in with the twos. If he's getting in with the twos, I think, like in the spring game, then –
it'll show
he's
you
probably not going to play this year, but next year he's going to be a guy, and I think he could be a guy that could potentially start in 2021.
Or it's like one of those things like what Landon had to do. He was a break glass in case of emergency when Cole Mosier went down.
Yeah, he could definitely be that end up being that third guard that they might not want to use, but if something happened,
hey,
they
we got four games. Like,
right.
So I like that one. Also, just John Young, too, is like the most – grown up 18-year-old ever. He's intriguing in that right.
Yeah, he's been well coached too. He plays with the motor, and it's big for those for guys, especially at that position, to get in there early and just kind of learn. And if he's able to really adapt and learn quickly and really show physically that he can handle playing at that level, mm-hmm. I think he's going to have a chance to potentially be the third, I think, true freshman to play on the offensive line, potentially. You have Darian Kennard and George Asafo-Ajie. I think they're the only other two.
It's nice to have
Landon Young.
Yeah.
So they'll be fourth.
Some tackles that play a lot of football.
But all those guys were four-star prospects. So, like, they were big recruiting wins. And physically, they were ready to go right from the get-go. And I think John Young is right there, too.
For my next guy, who I think it's intriguing just to see. I'm interested to see how well he fits in right away. And that's Bo Allen. I mean, of course, you're intrigued to watch the quarterback throw. I mean, I've seen him play against Kentucky high school competition. I've seen him throw against, in shorts and t-shirts in camps. But I'm interested to see what he does against this secondary.
I want to see his accuracy travel. He's really accurate in high school.
Yeah.
Let's see it travel to this next level.
Yeah, and it should. But how much bigger does he get? Because he's always struck me as, like, a smaller guy.
Yes.
But he is, like, still 6'2", which is pretty normal for quarterbacks now. I mean, look at the NFL. Right. Half of them are, like, 5'11", guys. So, and also, that pecking order, too. Like, I know, Henshaw and them, they keep that stuff so close to the vest. But how they rotate these guys in, when they do their 7-on-7s and stuff, like who gets to go with which receivers? Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, obviously they're not going to throw Bo in right away with the twos. Like, it's not going to happen. But they also kind of have to because they're hamstrung. You're going to have Terry Wilson, who's, I'm sure, going, like, limited at best.
Right.
I bet you he's only throwing
one-on-ones. Yeah, he ain't playing in the spring game.
It's only going to be, like, one-on-one drills, and that's a maybe. So,
then Sawyer, we're not really sure
Scalzo's got an ACL, what mm-hmm. the deal is, Sawyer, so.
Oh, do we know if Imani Gilmore's playing baseball?
I heard he wasn't, okay. Or at least the baseball folks hadn't really heard anything from him.
Okay.
So, so he should be there, but.
Big spring for him.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially because one of those two is not going to end up here between Scalzo and Gilmore. Mm-hmm. And if Scalzo's hurt, here's your time to go show out. So that's one big reason. I'm just see where Bo Allen's going to fall.
Yes, and then you can throw Joey Gatewood in there too. Now he's not going to play, but just getting to see
him in
action.
I just want to and you don't get the benefit of it in practice or in the scrimmage because you're not going to touch him.
But you're going to get to see that big arm.
Yeah.
Pick up your jaw.
Yeah, and just, from a physical standpoint, we've had these JUCO guys, and I remember when Terry first came in, you were like, oh, this dude's big. And then when he had that summer of lifting, this dude's been at Auburn lifting weights down there, you know? So I'm pumped to see some Joey Gatewood as well.
Right.
Who you got next, Mr. Luckett?
I'll go with Khalil Branham, the only receiver. It's an early enrollee. That's a position, that receiver. It's a little bit of a logjam, but I think it's a pretty safe bet that a couple guys might be leaving after the spring in the portal. And Branham, can he come in and be a guy that can potentially play right away? On tape in high school, he's got some pretty good run after the catch ability. He's pretty good size, physicality, deceptive speed. Is he a guy that could potentially be a player, a guy maybe a rotation piece for them? So just seeing him out, running routes, catching passes. By all accounts, he's this ridiculous hard worker. So,
yeah, and Branham, it's like the Salmonelli kid, where I don't know how much, I just want to see more of him. Because, you can't help but get hype when that's one thing that I've missed. We haven't gotten our typical hype, our catching videos, because he's just doing it at the facility. Right. He's not, in his backyard. But I want to know how much, how fast that kid is.
When you turn on his tape, he has football player traits. They're putting him wildcat quarterback. He's running the ball traditionally. He's doing things in the short passing game and just being an athlete, making plays, make people miss, run people over. And then he's able to run vertically and showing the ball skills to go up and catch the ball in traffic. So you can see it with them pretty easily when you turn on the tape. It just does that immediately come to fruition,
right?
On a college
right.
practice
how,
field.
How long does it take for that
to kick
know,
in?
Exactly. In receivers, I feel like it takes longer than most.
Well, I mean, it depends on how good they are.
Well, yeah, of course, but I think just the getting open and not being faster than everybody and running routes.
Yes,
becoming
a tactician and learning what the secondary is doing and learning how to recognize that, recognize coverages and what you're supposed to do to create space or separation. And I mean, there's a lot that goes into it that I don't think a lot of people realize, but.
I did a podcast
can be difficult
last week with Travis Graff and Kalen Harris. Travis does work for Cats Illustrated, and
he's on our Sources Say.
Yes, pod. Sources Say as well. This podcast, the Cat Scan podcast, a little bit different. But the other guy, Kalen, was saying he heard Josh Ali's all in on the slot. You like that?
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think it does too. But you got to find outside guys, but I think from just getting his numbers up as far as receptions and his skill set kind of fits it too. He's fast. He's a good route runner. That makes sense. So
well, with Ali, I think vertically he doesn't have that. I don't know. It's not he doesn't have that extra gear, just that burst, but short area quickness, getting right. in and out of breaks. I think that's where he kind of excels.
And then that gives Bryce Oliver. More opportunities on the outside.
Isaiah Epps, who's a guy a lot of people forget about.
Yeah. Alan Daly, he'd been playing a lot of inside, get him outside, you mm-hmm. know, where his probably his more natural position. So so I like that. I that just dawned on me. I felt like that was news worth sharing. Do we got any more guys that we're incredibly intrigued by? I mentioned Sam Manelli just because I want to see him.
Like, the Eric Jackson, just because of his size, he's that thumper in the run game. And because of some transfers, it's a thin position group right now. They've got their three,
mm-hmm.
Chris Holtz, DeAndre Square, Jamin Davis. But Jackson's going to get a lot of reps this spring.
Every
and to
year,
see what he does with those.
Every year they've had the early enrollee inside linebacker gets a ton of reps because they get shoulder injuries, and during the regular season, you just play through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you don't practice that much. But it's spring, so why make people go through with it? You know, like Jamin Davis. He led the spring game in tackles one year.
Mm-hmm.
Trey Wilkins got a lot of play last year as an early enrollee. So that's a good call on your part. And I also wanted to throw in just Joe Williams. Like, I don't think he's going to play right away, but that dude's just a freak athlete.
He is. And that secondary is just stupid, man.
Yeah, it's really stupid. And the same thing, I mean, it's the same with Jatan McClain. Like, that the running back room, they're mm-hmm. like, Who are you getting reps from?
Right. And Joe Williams is a guy, like we talked about Joseph, where do they put him? I think he could play corner or safety. So trying to figure out,
mm-hmm.
kind of like they did with Quandre Mosley last year. They started him at corner,
mm-hmm.
threw him inside at nickel, then let him settle in at safety.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, running back, I think Jatan McClain was a guy that could have potentially pushed for early PT. But with A.J. Rose coming back,
yeah,
it's just a loaded room right now.
Right. But hell, maybe one of him or Tisdale tries out slot.
Maybe.
You know?
Kick return too. I think Tisdale might be the guy there.
I think they're looking at that for him. And I think we're looking at wrapping up the show, Adam Luckett.
Another week.
Spring practice, it's not gonna start until late
February.
So what'll happen is spring break, they'll do a week of practice for spring break. So that's like last week of February. They'll get a week of practice in. Spring break's like the 1st of March, around SEC tournament time. So they're off a week, and then it's finish out. So
and they get their spring. Yeah, they get that, and then when it's spring game, we're looking at second weekend in April.
Yeah, something like that.
So they space it out. They space it out. Good job.
Yeah, they space it out. So
they're not a savage like Scott Satterfield wanting to get the spring game done before the end of February.
Freaking jerk. Get out of your Saturday, Scott, you and your stupid tots. But as usual, just want to thank you all for listening, for putting up with us during the off season. And I hope you all enjoyed the Pro Bowl. Hope you enjoyed Za'Darius Smith and Josh Allen getting some sacks.
I couldn't tell you last time watch the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, I didn't watch it either. I saw Zadarius' Kobe celebration. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I bet Brad Wyatt was talking about the Pro Bowl when they had that kid in from Philly.
I'm sure they had that on the facility for sure.
Had that conversation. And then Super Bowl on Sunday. Who you got?
I got the Chiefs, man. Number 15. Riding with Mahomes.
Yeah, I think I also just want Andy Reid to get one.
I do worry about the Chiefs' run defense. It's not great, and that's what the Niners do.
They'll just run the damn ball.
But if they can just, yeah, if they can slow it down a little bit and make Jimmy G
play quarterback,
I think the Chiefs could be in good shape.
Oh, we didn't bring up your conspiracy theory.
Yeah, before Mike Stoops, I had a conspiracy theory that Mark Stoops was just waiting on the Super Bowl to be over to hire somebody on one of those staffs. But when I did a little deep dive, couldn't really find the guy who it would be.
Well, so Matt House, bring him back. Yeah.
We get the band back together, Matt House. But no, I don't think he's not after. I think that year for House is going exactly like he hoped it would.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Win a Super Bowl, maybe next year. Defense gets a little bit better, and then all of a sudden he can be potentially a
coordinator,
NFL DC.
Yeah,
guy.
They when we were looking up to see what kind of potential replacements they could have, folks, just look up Andy Reid's head coaching picture.
Yes, go to KansasCityChiefs.com, go to coaching staff, and look at Andy Reid.
It's magnificent. Only time he's ever worn a suit.
Did you see they were all wearing
Hawaiian shirts?
Yes.
And to go to the Super Bowl. Oh, he's wearing Hawaiian. I hope he wears a Hawaiian shirt on the sideline during the game.
Miami.
Exactly. Why not? In Rome.
And before we go, rest in peace, Kobe. Sad story.
Oh, God. It just sucks.
Yeah. Nothing really else you can say. Yeah. Sad.
Really sad stuff. I'm from till the day I die, every time I shoot a paper ball into a trash can, Kobe.
For people our age, man, he was there from the time we were little until didn't retire until, you know, sometime in our 20s. So 20 years he was in their life.
Even when he retired, he was one of the last. Him and Dirk were all. I guess Vince Carter's the last one that's still around.
That's still playing,
but NBA Street 2, when that kid came out in 03, it was like prime of me. I'm 12 years old, like playing, you know, travel basketball for the first time, just all in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Kobe was one of the guys. He had a butter shot on that game, too. Just smooth.
Kobe was the main star, really. It was him and LeBron for a while, but the internet era, really. It started when the internet pretty much started in 97, and then as that grew and got bigger, and then as the NBA kind of took off.
There's a funny webpage of, like,
with the Twitter era, and he was all part of that.
It was, like, announcing that draft pick. He got picked on, like, their website.
Yeah.
It's really funny. You know, just old school internet. So, gone way too soon. And even us football guys can appreciate greatness and hate to see him gone. And we hate to leave you, but it's time to go. We thank y'all for listening, for subscribing, for listening to all of the great podcasts on the KSR Network. We'll see you next week, National Signing Day, and have a little Super Bowl to talk about.
There we go.
Enjoy the last football while you can.
Football season never ends, man.
Enjoy it while you can. We'll see y'all later. Go Cats. Go Kroger.